ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मुखं करोति वाचलं पाङ्गुं नाङ्गायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दिनचारणम्। हरे कृष्ण, जय श्री प्रभुपाद की। सो जस्ट बिफोर बिगिनिंग द भागवतम क्लास, जस्ट लाइक टू mention a few words, just very briefly. I would like to thank various devotees who were at the airport yesterday to receive me. And I guess later on today, during the Sunday feast, we'll get more of an opportunity to discuss maybe out of Bhagavatam topics a little bit. But I'm very happy to be here in Chopati Temple. This is my first visit. I've heard many things about the temple. I've also heard many things about the devotees in the temple. When I left India some 13 years back, I was leaving their lordships, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath in ISKCON Secunderabad. By Krishna's mercy, I'm coming back to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath in Chapati. All these things are Krishna's arrangements. Whatever happens to all of us, we are advised to consider everything actually as Krishna's mercy, because everything is Krishna's mercy. We may not always understand it or see it that way, but I'm sure all of you have heard different stories confirming the fact that everything that actually happens to all of us, it is sanctioned by Krishna, it is Krishna's arrangement, and ultimately it is the way he bestows mercy. Sometimes he bestows special mercy, very special mercy to different devotees. I'm sure all of us have already experienced or possibly will experience in the future. So I'm very happy to be here in this temple particularly. It's a very it's like entering the spiritual world, coming back with seeing and having the privilege of being with all of you, with all a very colorful temple, not only in terms of the decorations, but we don't see that many temples that have so much of saffron color. So it's it's nice to be amongst saffron color a little bit. Of course, we are beyond saffron. Saffron, there's an expression in French: l'habit ne fait pas le moine. For those who may know French, l'habit ne fait pas le moine, which means the dress, it doesn't make the monk, kind of. The dress is not all in all, it is what is inside. So, since this is meant to be Bhagavatam class, we will normally the Bhagavatam class goes till about, what, 9 o'clock or something. 9:15. Anyways, I'm also very, pleased to see my dear God brother Janani Vas Prabhu, whom I haven't seen for all these years that I've been away. And Krishna is very kind. Mayapur Dham was the first temple that Krishna arranged for me to serve here in India. And even before coming to India, when I was in Ottawa in Canada, where I joined, I would be hearing, you know, as we all do, those of us especially who were serving in other countries, we would, especially in those early days, be hearing different cassettes and recordings of things that are going on in India. And I remember when I was in Ottawa in the kitchen hearing different lectures, and there was one prayer, one of the prayers by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Janani Vas Prabhu used to recite. I don't know, somehow it got on a tape, and then after some time Krishna arranged that I was able to be in India and be in his good association. So I'm looking forward. When are you going back to Mayapur? What date? Not fixed. Later on this month? After 10 days, yeah. Anyways, I'm going to Mayapur, so I'll probably see you there later on also. Okay, Bhagavatam class. So today we are reading from the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 1, text number 54. This is the chapter entitled The History of the Life of Ajamil. So everyone may kindly follow on the board. Labdhava Labdhava Nimittam Avyaktam Vyakta Vyaktam Bhavatyuta Yatha Yoni Yatha Bijam Sabhavena Baliyasa. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The fruit of activities a living being performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desires. This unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies. Because of his intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. Please repeat after me. The fruitive activities. The gross body is a product of the subtle body. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 8:6, yam yam bapi smaram bhavam tyaja jante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kanteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Translation: whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. The atmosphere of the subtle body at the time of death is created by the activities of the gross body. Thus, the gross body acts during one's lifetime, and the subtle body acts at the time of death. The subtle body which is called Linga, the body of desire, is the background for the development of a particular type of gross body, which is either like that of one's mother or like that of one's father. According to the Rig Veda, if at the time of sex the secretions of the mother are more profuse than those of the father, the child will receive a female body. And if the secretions of the father are more profuse than those of the mother, the child will receive a male body. These are the subtle laws of nature, which act according to the desire of the living entity. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna at the time of death, the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Or if he is still more perfect, he will not take another material body, but will immediately get a spiritual body and thus return home back to Godhead. This is the process of transmigration of the soul. Therefore, instead of trying to unite human society through pacts for sense gratification that can never be achieved, it is clearly desirable to teach people how to become Krishna conscious and return home back to Godhead. This is true now and indeed at any time. So in this verse, we get a little glimpse of the science of how both the gross and subtle bodies are created. In this verse, it is explaining how our future body, whether it is a gross body, subtle body, or even spiritual body, is based on desires. On desires. In the Vedic literatures, this explanation of how scientific, everything is very scientifically ordained or arranged. Nothing happens. This modern theory of things happening by chance. Nothing happens by chance. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in connection with this verse, that one who is able to understand about his appearance and activities when he comes in this material world, such a person actually becomes qualified to go back to Krishna. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tattvataha chaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjana. So the whole purpose of the human form of life is to actually understand Krishna. At the very end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that this was true in the past, and that, how does he say it? This is true now, and indeed at any time. This is something very important for us to understand, how the Vedic knowledge, Vedic understanding is standard knowledge, which is true at all times. That is the principle of dharma. Just like Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita also, that if one is not accepting the principles of dharma, Ashrada dhana purusha dharma sasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsarava. One will again come back or remain in the material world. So the principles of dharma are actually eternal principles. They exist on two platforms. On the spiritual transcendental platform in relation with the spirit soul. Aham Brahmasmi, we are eternal spirit souls meant to be engaged in the service of the Lord. That is the higher level of dharma that is referred to as Sanatan Dharma. Or we, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sometimes speaks of this as Jaiva Dharma, the Dharma occupation of the Jiva, living entity, spirit soul. There is another level of Dharma which is also standard, we could say eternal. Eternal system or process. So on that higher platform of Sanatana Dharma, that is directed or meant for the spirit soul living entity. The other level of dharma is called Varnashrama Dharma, and that is meant for the embodied living entities who are here in the material world and who should lead a particular kind of life which will facilitate the development of Sanatana Dharma. So both are actually very scientific. The occupation and activities of the spirit soul on the transcendental platform means the activities of bhakti, devotional service, the science of devotion, the nectar of devotion given by Srila Rupa Goswami and by all the Goswamis of Vrindavan. This was Lord Chaitanya's, we could say, special gift, special order to the Goswamis of Vrindavan is to expose or present, to extract from the Vedic literatures the science of bhakti, the science of devotion. And that has been very nicely presented by Sri Larupa and Sanatana Goswami. So this is the science of bhakti, which begins, of course, also with the same principle of Sraddha. Ado Sraddha, Tato Sadhu Sangha, beginning with Sraddha, faith. By faith, we also understand a deepening of conviction. What should be that conviction? That conviction is that desire. And once we are fortunate to get some preliminary knowledge about who we are, developing a strong desire to reinstate ourselves as spirit souls, as eternal spirit souls. And that comes especially through the association of devotees. That is always very nicely explained how bhakti, the process of bhakti, takes birth. Krishna bhakti, janma mul hoy sadhu sangha. Krishna bhakti, janma mul hoy, the main cause for this sense of devotion on the spiritual transcendental platform to appear is this sadhu sangha, association of devotees. And then it is nicely explained how Krishna prem, pure love of God, also can only appear, can only become manifest, can only become realized by this very same association of devotees. And actually, this is the very wonderful process given to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how through the association of devotees we can become inspired and increase and cultivate our desire to become advanced, to become nicely fixed up in the process of bhakti, in the process of devotional service, without which, as it is, this is the theme of this verse here, without which, at the time of death, we will not be able to, we will actually not be qualified to go back home, back to Godhead. There's one line in the purport. How Prabhupada explains that the gross body acts during one's lifetime and the subtle body acts especially at the time of death. It's very significant. Of course, the subtle body acts during the life, but especially the test, the main test, comes at the moment of leaving this body. We generally do not understand, even sometimes as devotees, how every single act, every single thought, every single activity that we perform becomes registered, and this becomes part of the subtle body. Actually, as devotees, we are meant to practice devotional service in order to destroy our subtle body before leaving this gross body. This very famous expression which I'm sure everyone has heard, which was especially elaborated upon also by one of our very great devotees who passed away not that long ago, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Die before you die. This is very significant and very important that we have been accumulating all kinds of material thoughts and material desires and material impressions. We cannot imagine for so many lifetimes and all accumulated and residing within this subtle body. And unless we do away and completely clean out these material desires, these material attachments, they will be there. They will remain there at the time of death, and they will carry us. This is the scientific explanation and understanding that even, Prabhupada explains, even one, even if we have one material desire, we must fulfill. The laws of nature are very strong, very stringent. One material desire will force us to take another material body. The example is there, Bharat Maharaj, isn't it? It's a small attachment. But due to this small attachment, was forced to again come back in another material body. So as devotees, we are having this very great opportunity, very rare opportunity, by the process of devotional service, especially through the association of devotees, to remain fixed in our goal of developing Krishna consciousness. And the end result will be that, actually one of two results, as mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. In the very least, we will get in our next life a body within a family of devotees, which is good. And if we are very fortunate, if we have practiced very, very seriously, then we may, by the grace of Krishna, not have to take on another material body and be able to simply remain in our spiritual body. Our spiritual body will become manifest at that time. So the Vedic literatures in this way, beginning from the Bhagavad Gita, explains very thoroughly, very nicely, this science of bhakti, the process has always been the same, will remain the same, but as explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, this is actually, when one is fortunate to take up this process of devotional service, which awakens us to our actual nature, our spiritual nature, then one of the signs, one of the characteristics, one of the symptoms is that we become more and more joyful and happy in our lives. And this is what Srila Prabhupada used to explain regarding his devotees, his younger disciples, when he started the movements, how he had, by this process, was making, turning hippies into happies, isn't it? But the process of bhakti devotional service makes one actually satisfied and happy. Susukam kartam avyayam. The process of bhakti devotional service is meant to be joyfully or happily perform. So this is the special mercy that all of us are receiving by Srila Prabhupada, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We see this especially when we come in the association of devotees who are nicely engaged in activities of devotional service. All of us who have come in contact with devotees, this was my experience, especially in the beginning, became attracted by the good nature and good qualities. I remember in the very early days at the Ottawa Temple, where I was able to first actually come in contact with devotees, it was just very natural to be wanting, to want to be with the devotees, because they just had very natural, nice qualities. Their speech was very pleasant. They were joyful by nature. They made sense when they talked. You know, many people with whom we talk in the material world don't make so much sense. Or they just, you know, you end up with a very long conversation not really knowing what you talked about. So devotees become, because we come in contact with this transcendental knowledge, I'm sure many devotees have experienced, you know, we hear this from new devotees sometimes. You know, a devotee has been in the temple for a few months, attending regularly, you know, the program. Then all of a sudden, either the temple president or the temple commander will tell him, now you go out and preach to this person, talk to this person. Now, I don't know anything, you know. I'm a new devotee. People have that kind of new devotees. Then all of a sudden, when one is put in that kind of situation, one becomes surprised at how much one knows, you know. Krishna consciousness is like that. Because when we practice on a regular basis, through association and by hearing, by the regular process given to us by Lord Chaitanya, given to us by the Goswamis, I'm beginning especially with hearing and chanting, so many things we're not even aware of very often, become part of us. And that is actually one of the special characteristics of bhakti or devotional service, is that knowledge, transcendental knowledge, causeless knowledge actually becomes acquired, causeless knowledge. And we find ourselves very surprisingly and pleasantly, you know, speaking sometimes things that we think we didn't know about. Of course, not that we should be, you know, speculating. But that is a nice process of devotional service. It is happily performed, we are always aspiring and hankering, should be aspiring and hankering for the good association of devotees. And I'm again very happy to get a chance to be here in India, because Srila Prabhupada, he wanted that devotees, especially from outside of India, Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing this in the early days, and actually it's a standing order that those who are preaching outside of India in different countries, because there's so much of contamination, so much of maya, so many obstacles, one needs to come to India at different times to actually become purified. One needs to visit the holy dhams. One needs to associate with various devotees and in this way become inspired to continue preaching Krishna consciousness. So all of us are very fortunate to be having this opportunity given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And the message here this morning is that actually material desires are very, very deeply rooted within our heart. Our false ego is very deeply seated within the subtle body. And unless we become very, very determined, very, very convinced, and very strong in our desire to practice very nicely, to very nicely apply the process of bhakti, then when that moment of leaving this body comes, and we don't know when that may be, then we may again be forced to remain for some time in this material world. So we should all take advantage that is given to all of us, this process of bhakti, of devotional service, and cultivate this strong desire to become fixed up devotees, to just become more and more absorbed in the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mission of Srila Prabhupada. There are so many instructions. Srila Prabhupada has given, practically speaking, unlimited ways, unlimited instructions and orders on how to spread Krishna consciousness. And we simply need to take up at least one of those instructions and become very much absorbed, pray to the Lord that we can become very attached to some particular aspect of Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada explains, and there's so many, nine process of devotional service is there, but if even we become attached to one of these processes, it is so powerful that it is sufficient to carry us back to Krishna, back carry us back to the spiritual world. So all of the devotees here in Chopati are very very fortunate to be here, to have the wonderful association of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. I hadn't seen Maharaj for many years. By Krishna's arrangement, he was there at the New York Rath Yatra a few weeks ago. And that was my first time at the New York Rath Yatra. So we met briefly at that time, and we both thought, well, if Krishna allows, very soon we'll be able to meet again at the Chopati temple. He actually told me, you come here. So I kind of was a little obliged to follow to accept his invitation to come here at Chopati temple. And as I mentioned a little earlier, we'll get an opportunity later on this afternoon to possibly discuss a few other things. So, again, thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments possibly on this verse this morning?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, in one of the purports of Srila Prabhupada, it was mentioned that a living entity remains unconscious for millions of years after total dissolution. Is there anywhere in the scriptures where it's mentioned why is this period where a living entity is not a part of the material world, just completely unconscious for millions of years? I couldn't really understand why does a living entity go through this.
Well, it is right there in the Bhagavatam, the whole explanation of how the creation, material creation, takes place. The whole material creation takes place through Mahavishnu, through the breathing of Mahavishnu, for many, many thousands of years, the creation remains manifest, isn't it, as he exhales. And then the material creation becomes closed up when he inhales, and all of the material energy, including all the living entities, enter the body of Mahavishnu. So that inhaling and exhaling takes a long period of time in our calculation, and that is when we remain unconscious. So that is there in the Bhagavatam, first canto of the Bhagavatam, where it explains about this, you know, this is like the prakriti. There is, like in the Bhagavad Gita, it explains about para prakriti, the living entity, and apara prakriti, material nature. So material nature is eternal, but as Prabhupada explains, sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. It is manifest when Mahavishnu exhales, and it is unmanifest when he retracts everything within his body, and those living entities, conditioned living entities, are also within that body and remain unconscious during that time. Of course, living entities also remain unconscious of their Krishna consciousness, even within the material creation, as we know, until they come in contact with devotees. And that also may be, for my God, we don't know, a very, very long time. So, means that most of the time that we are out of the spiritual world, either we are unconscious within the body of Mahavishnu, or we are unconscious in the material world in some kind of body, including human body. Because it is not automatic that when we get a human body, we become Krishna conscious. I mean, one generally has to go through many human bodies. One has to take birth many times in the human form before getting that rare opportunity to come in contact with a devotee. So I cannot quote what verse it explains, but you know that section where it the Bhagavatam elaborates on the creation, material creation, that understanding is there through the inhaling, exhaling. Yeah. So this, with that understanding, it should serve as an impetus for us to become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, we'll be unconscious for all this long period of time. One question. Oh, okay.
Krishna. Maharaj, you said that the material desires are very strong and the false ego is also very strong. And until unless we take shelter of the devotees or we give up the or we work according to the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Now, there are many things. We may control certain things. But if one point somewhere we miss, there are so many senses, so many desires, so many things we may do. But if one we miss something, then everything will go, little leakage from somewhere. Everything is gone. So how to reach to that stage to check that?
How to avoid such leakage? Yes. The more we are conscious of the danger of such leakage, you know, of one desire, if one desire remains, then that will be an impetus for us to become more serious, more surrendered. We know, at least we should know, that by our own self, it is impossible, totally impossible. In the same way, for example, that, you know, what Arjuna, what he had to face in the Battle of Kurukshetra, from a material calculation, Arjuna should not have won the battle. The odds were too much against the Pandavas. But because Krishna was there, and only because Krishna was there, so in the same way, a devotee is always very conscious of his precarious position, that unless we get the special mercy, unless we attract the mercy of either Krishna's devotees, the mercy of Guru, the mercy of Krishna, then probably there'll be more than just one of those desires, you know. There'll probably be many material desires that will still be there, you know, deep down that we're not even aware of, possibly. Because subtle body, you know, the subtle body, as the word says, it is subtle. We're not very often even aware of certain things. So, if a devotee is very serious about applying the process, always depending and desiring and praying for the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, actually it is only by their mercy that it will be possible to completely eradicate all tinges of material desire that may be there. Otherwise, by our own selves, it is not possible. So that means a devotee constantly prays for that mercy, prays for that mercy of having the constant, regular association of devotees, and prays for the mercy of his spiritual master and of Krishna. So like this, we need to always be increasing, intensifying our desire to act as devotees, to perform as devotees, like that. Otherwise it's not possible. Yeah. Yes.
Krishna, you said that at the time of death, the subtle body takes over, and depending on our mentality at the time of death and our desires during this lifetime, we get another body.
Yes.
Now suppose if the next life we are going to get a human body, does our desire and does our mentality help us to decide our parents in the next life and our gender in the next life, or it is determined by the law of karma?
The law of karma means according to our desires. Karma is directly related. Karma is something material. That is why of the five principles mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara, Jiva, Kala, Prakriti, and Karma, only one is temporary, karma, because it is material. So karma is completely decided based on our desire. And that is also very much connected with our activities on the gross bodily platform. So at the time of death, our material activities or our spiritual activities will determine whether we have this particular parent, this particular gender. Just like in the Bhagavatam, it explains. Now, I don't want to open up a whole controversial topic at the end of a class here, but I mean, it's explained there in the Bhagavatam how within a family situation, if the husband is attached to his wife, he will have the body of a female in the next life. And the opposite, if the wife is attached to her husband, well, of course, if her husband is a devotee and if she's attached to him and seeing him as guru, as her guide or protector, well, either she'll take on a male body or she'll take on a spiritual body. So it is, as mentioned here in the purport, everything is done very, very scientifically. How we get a gross body, how we again get our spiritual body. So yes, we actually, by our thoughts, our deeds, our activities, we determine, that is the law of karma, we determine by these activities, by these thoughts, by these desires, what our future position will be, either materially, on the gross platform and on the subtle platform, or either spiritually, attaining our spiritual body. Yeah. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I have heard that mostly this material world is prevalent with mode of passion. And in Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that those who leave the body in the mode of passion, they acquire a human body. But the other thing is, I have also heard that human body is very rare. So if mostly everyone is in mode of passion and they leave their body in mode of passion, do they acquire a human body?
It is not that the human body is only in the mode of passion. In the human form of life, depending again on our previous position, our previous activities, our present human body is a mixture of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And the whole Varnashrama system classifies, one according to the modes of nature, like Brahmana, mostly in the mode of goodness, Shudra, mostly in the mode of ignorance. Kshatriya, mostly in the mode of passion, like that. And Vaishya, mixed passion and ignorance. So everything is actually based on association. That is why in the Vedic literature, within the Varnashram system, one should associate with brahmanas, people who are in the mode of goodness, so that one can be elevated gradually. And of course, if one is fortunate to be associating with someone who is a Vaishnava, means above mode of goodness, pure goodness, then that kind of association will, as mentioned in the purport, will either give one a body in a family of devotees, you know, a devotee body, or will, if one is very fortunate, enable one to get his spiritual body. So it, in the human form of life, it is also a mixture. It's not only passion, and again, it will be determined according to the kind of association. Although we may be predominantly in the mode of passion, if we associate with people who are in the higher mode, we'll be developing a higher mode. Or if we associate with devotees, we'll be able to transcend the modes of nature. So it's, that's why association is so essential. Yeah. Okay, I think we'll bring it to a close. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.